Time to settle in for some conversation on this Friday, November 5th. I'm Rhonda McBride. Happy Friday, everyone. Coming up, Hora Fey's musical journey, showcased at the Rock Ock Indigenous Music Festival, one that blends her Native American, Black, Puerto Rican, and Italian heritage. Juneau Community School's fall schedule, out for the first time in a long time, it now includes a few in-person classes. Tonight's Egan lecture speaker explains why health insurance in Alaska is so high and why there's hope that costs may come down. Also, meet this month's featured artist at the Juneau Artist Gallery, how Sunny Zhang brings her Chinese culture and a love of the Juneau outdoors to her paintings. In our forecast for Juneau tonight, mostly cloudy but isolated showers possible, with scattered showers later in the evening. Lows in the mid-30s with northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday, a little wetter with widespread rain in the morning, but more showers by the afternoon. At higher elevations, rain is expected to turn to snow on Saturday. Areas near Eagle Crest could see some snow tomorrow morning and later on in the evening. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy skies, lows in the lower 30s. Now on Sunday morning, patchy fog for Juneau and Douglas, giving way to partly cloudy skies through Monday. Highs in the upper 30s, cooler nights with lows dropping to the mid-20s. Tuesday, we have a chance of snow, otherwise cloudy. Sun rises at 8:26 tomorrow morning, sun sets at 4:56 in the afternoon. We have 8 hours, 39 minutes of daylight.
Sounds wild.
Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
A red squirrel scolds me on a late winter day as I'm hiking through the southeast Alaska forest, surrounded by Sitka spruce and western hemlock trees. The surface of the crusty snow is littered with small, papery flakes, the outer covering of the seeds that flocks of redpolls have extracted from spruce cones. Although the seeds are very small, like tiny poppy seeds, they are nutritious, and they're important for small birds and mammals in the Pacific coastal forests. Sitka spruce are the largest of all spruce trees, and they're the third largest conifer on Earth, after the coastal redwoods and Douglas fir. As might be expected, they are named for the community of Sitka in southeast Alaska. Sitka spruce is the Alaska state tree. Sitka spruce trees produce a lot of pollen in the spring, and a gust of wind can release an explosive, smoky cloud of yellow pollen. The hard, dark cones ripen, lightening to tan brown and generally opening in early October. A single cone yields almost 200 tiny seeds. A Ziploc sandwich bag with an ounce of spruce seeds would contain about 13,000 seeds. Those little seeds are nutritious, and a red squirrel can extract the nearly 200 seeds from a spruce cone in about 3.5 minutes. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
KTOO would like to take a moment to acknowledge that we are on the homelands of the Thlinkit. In the borough of Juneau, we have the two Kwans, the Ak Kwan and the Taku Kwan. KTOO studios sit on the ancestral home of the Hlinedi, or dog salmon people of the Ak Kwan. We acknowledge those families of the Hlinedi who made use of these lands and waterways for thousands of years and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin tau kanakaya ha anikak gunish cheese.
Oh, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey,
Ganesh for being here with us today. I'm Rhonda McBride, and you are listening to Juneau Afternoon and the sounds of Hora Fey, one of the headliners at the Rock Ock Indigenous Music Festival. Hora Fey, Her name means pure faith, and she definitely puts her faith into the power of music. From folk to blues to soul, she has been on a lifelong musical journey. Taj Mahal said this about her: "This beautiful songbird transcends time and brings the message of our ancestors." But who knows? Maybe she sends a message of music right back to our ancestors. But for now, we have a chance to get to know her a bit. So, poor Faye, why don't we start off with you telling us something about yourself and your heritage?
Sure. Okay. So, I'm Buddha Faye. My Tuscarora name is Yesqueri, which means she builds bridges. So my mom is Tuscarora, and all my mom's family are from North Carolina. We're from the east coast of the Carolinas. Yeah, so we're like river and ocean sound people. My father, he's from Puerto Rico, or Borinquen. He's Taino.
And is that an indigenous people?
Yeah, they're the first people that Columbus encountered. Yes, they're Taino. They're Arawak. Anyway, those are my tribal nations. I'm also mixed with Black and some Scots-Irish on my mom's side. And then my dad is partially Corsican. A lot of Corsicans went to Puerto Rico and settled there and married in with the Taino people.
So you are a true melting pot. And I have to ask, does this mixture of heritages sort of influence your music?
Yeah, completely. Yeah, I think completely. It's all everything that runs through my whole engine makes me rev up the way I do. Yes, it does. Especially on my mom's side, because I was raised with her, with my maternal family. I didn't know my dad's people until much later. So, but that didn't mean that I didn't feel that either, because I do. But
well, yeah. A lot of the rock awk performers have that fusion of heritages, like Bumia. Mm-hmm. And also we have a very talented young man who is of Tlingit, and he's African-American, Arias Hoyle. Mm-hmm. So you see a lot of that. Do you think that makes for a powerful blend?
Yeah, a pretty blend.
So how would you describe your music, the blend that you've arrived at?
Well, I mean, for sure, it's like it's a genre that came out of that whole history, especially in the South of the U.S., North Carolina, and all the way down in Louisiana, everywhere, all throughout the South in particular. You know, and of course, up in the Appalachians, it's another blend of people. Most people that do know me know that I've been talking about that whole connection between African and Native and through the music, which is why I like that song. I wrote that song called Great Grandpa's Banjo, which is a song dedicated to my grandmother's grandfather, who is Igbo. And his grandparents made the journey across the water from the Ivory Coast. And their knowledge of instruments and banjos, which is an African instrument, he and his brothers played on the plantation, and they played for all the functions in Sampson County. They were well known, and Boyet Lee, who the song is written for, he married Easter Blackwell, and she's Tuscarora. That's my maternal line, and her family, that whole family line of Blackwells, and we count about 8 generations back from my mom's generation on back of singers, female singers.
So set us up to listen to Grandpa's Banjo.
Okay. So I don't play banjo, but I did get Rhiannon Giddens to come and play that song. And she really plays a style that to me is very reminiscent of old Carolina banjo playing, plus herself, you know, her own And she's also from North Carolina. She used to play with the Carolina Chocolate Drops. So we're singing harmony and we're foot stomping on the porch. It's just a memory in my genes, I guess.
Well, thank you for sharing that memory with us through this song, because it is a very joyful song. So let's listen to it. So you perform widely, you know, you travel to Canada. I think I talked to you not too long ago when we were setting up this interview that we were going to have, that you were in New Mexico. And now, where are you?
I'm in Victoria, working with a film, like a score for a series, actually, about residential school. I think it's written and directed by Marie Clements, who's a well-known filmmaker. Anyway, the music is Wayne LaValle. But anyway, so I'm here doing that. They brought me in to help sing some stuff and make some choral stuff.
Well, given all that happened, it's a tragic story. It probably feels quite an honor to be able to lend your voice to a project like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because I live right there where the Beauval residential school was. And I work with a team of people with grief and trauma recovery. And we have like 4-day retreats. So a lot of the people there, my age and older, are residential school survivors. So we work with that. And so to be called in to do music for, yeah, it's quite something. So it's very deep.
Well, I think it's very needed, and I'm glad to hear that you're involved in a project like that. And a lot of the rock artists are very socially active. They're doing things to promote their indigenous culture. They're standing up for causes. They're standing up against things like racism. And they're doing a lot of good in the world. So I'm just curious, when you got the invitation to participate in Rock Awk, how did you feel about that?
Oh, Stephen called me. So anytime Stephen calls me and says, can you do this? I'm like, yes, I can. But I'm bummed out that I didn't get to fly there. I would like to go back.
So that Stephen Blanchett Kachung, who kind of envisioned this, he had been hatching this idea. And even though you can't physically be in Juneau, I'm sure people are really looking forward to your performance virtually. But what does it mean to you to be a part of this?
Great to be included, to join with everybody, to do something like this always. I'm honored. I'm just happy to be a part of it.
And what do you think about just having a music festival that is pretty much organized and all the headliners are all Indigenous people? How common is that in your experience?
It's becoming more common now, particularly in Canada it is, but in the States and in Hawaii and in Alaska, I think this is a newer. Yeah, it's awesome. And of course, it's going to keep going that way. So,
well, before we go, any thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners who are eagerly awaiting your performance, I'm sure?
Bring me back. So I can see everyone's face for sure, for real. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, of course. I mean, I think people really wish that you were coming to Juneau so that they could actually physically hear your sounds in a room, because those harmonies are just beautiful and powerful. So I want to thank you very much, Portafe, for joining us.
Thank you.
This song by Portafe is called Home. Up next, from making pottery to potting plants to talks about the neuroplasticity of the brain, how it's all happening at Juneau Community Schools. Let's get all around, don't worry again. Pull on me, don't you forget your light. Reminds me of the love is not far from sight. Where are you?
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Juno Afternoon. Thank you for being here with us. I'm Rhonda McBride. The mission of Juno Community Schools is to embrace lifelong learning. The pandemic, though, has made that a lot more challenging. But gradually, in-person classes are being brought back into the mix. And here today to talk about that, we have Suzanne Ainsworth with the Juno School District. She's the Community Schools Coordinator. Sarah Lewis, UAF Cooperative Extension. She's an Associate Professor of Health, Home, Family, and Community Development. And we also have Morgan Johnson, owner of the Juno Plant Studio. And Sarah Lewis and Morgan Johnson are teaching courses in this go-around, and we'll talk about that in some of the other programs. But first, I'd like to ask each of you what you love about the Community Schools program. And Suzanne, let's start with you, since you're the coordinator.
Oh, well, thank you, Rhonda. Well, since I'm the coordinator of the classes, I can't say enough about them. Most of our classes are for adults. We try to offer things that you've just always wanted to learn about. We have a pottery class right now that there's 12 students in that just started Tuesday. And most of the people I've talked to have said, I've just always wanted to learn about pottery. And this is their chance. There's just a multitude of things that can happen in our classes that are on the weekends and during the weeknights. You know, pickleball, we've offered pickleball, we've offered fencing, you know, self-improvement classes, art classes are always great. I've always, language classes are wonderful, but I've had a hard time finding a Spanish and French teacher. So that's my reach out for that. But lifelong learning is my mantra.
And do you find Juno a community where there are lots of people interested in lifelong learning?
You know, that's an interesting question. I find that the people that keep coming back to classes are somewhat of the same subset. They want to learn more. I think there is some people in life that are just, they're very busy with their kids and that type of a thing. So a lot of our classes are for, they're not for, but a lot of people that have like a little bit of extra time, they might be retired or they just want to learn about that subject. Like Sarah's classes are just wonderful for anybody that wants to preserve food. And it's really wonderful like that. Yeah.
You have had these classes that have mostly been online ever since COVID started. So is this the first time that you're going to be offering in-person classes?
Yes. And it's really exciting. We are actually doing three of them are in person and two of them are virtual. With the school district, well, we're cautious, but safety minded. So all of our classes will require, regardless of vaccination, for you to wear a mask. And when you come to class, you know, a self-check that you feel good, that type of a thing. But it's just so much fun having people in the class. The one thing I was going to make sure I said is we had pottery classes via Zoom last fall and spring. And we just started last Tuesday, the in-person one. And it was just really fun to have people there with their clay. We separated out, but they're able to talk to each other about their projects and see what one person is doing. It just really made a big difference.
Well, I imagine that that's the fun of these community classes, is the ability to meet people, socialize. So I want to go to you, Sarah. What is it that you love about the community classes, teaching them? Because you do all kinds of classes.
I do. And having done them for a number of years now, one of the things that I love is it kind of goes two ways. I will see people that I know will come and take my classes, or people that are acquaintances. Maybe I don't know them well, and through my classes, I get to know them better. But it also goes the other way. After, you know, you've been doing classes for a number of years, you see your students out in the community all the time. And I'm unfortunately not a great person with remembering names, but I do remember faces. And so I recognize people all the time around the community. And folks will, you know, sometimes stop me and say that they have expanded on a particular skill that they started to learn in one of my classes. And so I really like that connection with everybody in the community. And to touch on what you were talking about a little bit earlier between the online and the in-person classes, having really done a lot of online classes over the last 2 years, I have learned that there's definitely a continuum. There are people who really only want to take it in person. And so when COVID hit, a lot of those folks stopped taking the classes. But then there are a lot of people who really didn't want to take it in person, either because of time, like Suzanne was talking about, or online classes have been a bit less expensive because I'm not having to buy as many ingredients, et cetera. And so there's a lot of really great reasons why people are taking the online classes. But to really make a plug for the in-person, and part of the reason why I am taking this step with Suzanne to do some in-person classes, it's harder to actually learn and feel very competent with the skills when you're doing it online. I think we've learned a lot about that when it comes to kids in school and when they're learning online and how much they're really able to take in. And working for Cooperative Extension, one of our biggest goals is to really help skill building, not just give information, but actually have people change their behaviors. And that's a little bit harder when you're doing online classes sometimes. So having all of them, having the whole range of quick online classes, really in-depth in-person classes, and everything kind of in between, I think will really definitely be a good model going forward.
So Morgan, what about you? What do you enjoy?
I really enjoy getting to meet it's a whole new group of people compared to the people who usually come through my shop. I'm getting to meet new people through these classes that I've really enjoyed. I've done it again because the interactions that I get to have with people, the amount of questions they get to ask me, and I can ask people about their experiences with plants. I mostly really enjoyed the meeting new people.
I would think that the relationship aspect of community schools is a wonderful thing. So Morgan, you are teaching classes on how to repot plants.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about what's going to happen with that.
So people are going to bring in their plants and the next size up of pot, and I will show people how to create their own soil mixture for their specific plants. How I do it, like I add screen over the hole in the bottom, pebbles, and then creating the soil mix, and they'll get to see me do that with some plants and then get to try and do it on their own. I feel like often what I hear from people that repotting is the hardest part about having plants. So I think it's a really great way for people to try something new and have the confidence to do so.
So Sarah, you teach so many classes. What are you going to be offering?
So we're trying to get back. Suzanne and I are trying to get back on track. And what I've typically done is during one community school's season or semester, I will offer a series called Preserving Juno's Bounty. And then in the next semester, I will teach not a series, just individual classes. So this one is Preserving Juno's Bounty series. So it's a series of four classes on Saturdays because they are nice and long and in-depth. They're five-hour classes. They will be held at JD High in their teaching kitchen. And so one of the things that we're doing for mitigation is because the teaching kitchen has individual little mini kitchens, we're sort of allowing people to create a little bubble in each one of their little kitchens. So we're going to have a minimum of six people, but there are six potential bubbles. And we have actually filled the class. So we're not totally full. It's got enough people that we can hold it, which is really exciting. And so we're going to go ahead and give this a try. So basically all the different forms of food preservation, from water bath canning, pressure canning, which tends to be kind of the one a lot of people are intimidated by, pickling, fermenting, dehydrating, making jerky, making sourdough. We do all of those over the course of the 4 weeks.
That's a lot of great skills to have. So I imagine that people will be stocking up for winter, or perhaps maybe during the holiday season, preparing gifts to give people. I bet that is really popular for people.
It is. The gift giving one, that's always a great idea when we're doing them right before the holiday season, for sure.
What other courses, Suzanne, do you have coming up? Because it looks like you've got a long list of classes that would be fun to take.
We do. We have Actually, this coming Monday, we have neuroplasticity and strategies for improved memory. That's a mouthful, but it's a really wonderful Zoom class. Mary Shapansky is teaching that. It's on Monday, November 8th, 15th, and 22nd from 6 to 7:30, like I said, via Zoom. So you can just be in your chair at home, just listening to the class. And the best thing about this class is Mary has done all this wonderful research about memory. And I just actually sent the handout to the people that have registered and paid for the class. And then she's going to go through and talk about it, all the different factors. And then people will be able to ask their own questions. And it's a interactive class. So I learned a lot when I took it the last time. For instance, like sleep, you know, your brain needs to recharge. It helps your memory. So there's just a lot of different things. That class, it still has room for people to sign up. It's $36, which is a steal. Let's see, Morgan talked about her repotting plants class. That's going to be, I'm just going to fill in the little dates. That's Sunday, November 14th. We'll need to get people to sign up ahead of time. That is a total of $30. That includes the soil and the class time. That's going to be from 1 to 3, Harborview Elementary. Sarah talked about her class. And then the other class, I don't have Audra with me, but I talked Audra Henderson into teaching a class, Adult Nutrition and Behavior Change. This class, I've just always been working hard with weight issues and nutrition things. So I talked her into this class. She is with Cooperative Extension, and it is, you know, making healthy changes and talking about nutrition and eat real food, mostly plants, not too much. That's her slogan here. That particular class is really cool. We've never done this before, but it's going to be a Zoom class. Well, we've done a Zoom class, but it's going to be December 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 at lunchtime from 12 to 1. It's $45. The lunchtime thing was really cool because Audra said, you know, let's just talk about food. It's lunchtime. So we've got 8 people signed up for that. So we have plenty of room still for that. So I'm really excited about that class because I'm going to tune in also.
So how are you doing as far as the number of courses that you're offering compared to pre-COVID times?
Well, that's a great question. This is 5 courses we're offering this fall. And in our heyday about pre-COVID, I think I had like 22 classes. So the one thing I would like to encourage people, if there's anybody out there that has some type of a hobby or they want to share some type of skill they have, I am always happy to talk to people about an idea for a class. You know, that's how we grow our list of classes. We can do them in person, like things in the gym. You know, I don't think it's going to change the mask wearing. So I'm really looking for classes this spring. We used to have pickleball, but it's hard to find a pickleball instructor. We can still do classes wearing a mask, and then, you know, it's not that big of a deal. So I really would love for people to call me and talk about an idea or email me. My phone number is 523-1761. Yeah, I'm open to listening to any kind of idea, self-help, art, some type of a craft that you think people would like to learn about would be great.
I did want to take one of Sarah's classes on the mixes, the various mixes that you can make ahead of time to bake things later on. But I wasn't able to take that class that day. But I'll keep my eye out on that. Yeah. I imagine, Sarah, that that's a popular class that you offer. It sounds wonderful just to have stuff ready to mix and put in the oven.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one, you know, we take feedback like that. So I have filed that away, Rhonda. So in the spring, when we're putting together classes, that has definitely been one that people have enjoyed. So we'll put that in there. And I wanted to make a plug also to potential teachers of these classes. It's really satisfying. It's really an enjoyable thing to do. And I've got a little bit of a story that's related to my family, which is my daughter started doing judo as part of a community schools class years and years ago. Jay Watts offered judo through community schools. She started when she was about 6 or 7, and she continued until she was in middle of high school. Judo eventually was able to branch out and become to have a club of its own. And it was because of community schools giving them that start. You know, the building in which they could do it, the structure of creating the class, et cetera. And then, you know, it really did make a big difference in my daughter's life in terms of confidence and strength and all kinds of things. So there's lots of different topics out there that could be really beneficial to people in the community. So come forward and teach.
Morgan, I have to confess that I am a busy person, as many people are. And I'm guilty of plant abuse in that people will give me a cutting and it lives in this glass vase forever. I don't know if someone like me would be welcome in your shop.
I would say bring in the cutting and a pot, or stop in and I can help you pick out the right size pot, and then I can teach you how to cut them or how to plant the cuttings. As another tip, if you just bring in your plants into my shop, I will repot your plants for you for a fee. But if you would like to learn how to plant them, this would be a great experience for you.
Well, you know, people always have these wonderful spider plants and other kinds of plants that grow roots and water, and they seem to do well for a time. But I always kind of feel like that's not really fair to the poor plant.
They do look really nice in water, but after a time, you're right, they would like soil so that they can grow large. And then what's nice, then you open up space for different types of cuttings.
All right. Well, I thank all of you for being here with us, Sarah Lewis, Suzanne Ainsworth, and Morgan. Thanks a lot for being here, and hope you get a lot of people signed up and recruit some new teachers.
Yay. Thank you so much, Rhonda.
Thanks, Rhonda.
Thank you, guys.
That you're listening to now is called Gathering by Stephen Pichon Blanchette. Appropriate because he is one of the organizers for the Rock Auk Indigenous Music Festival, which officially gets underway at 4 o'clock this afternoon with an opening ceremony at the new Elizabeth Paradovich mural in downtown Juneau. And for this piece, Pichon teamed up with Juneau's Air Jazz, also known as Arius Hoyle. Up next, health insurance. Why costs are so high in Alaska, and what can be done to make it more affordable? This is Juneau Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Almost all of us are affected by the price of health insurance, and who doesn't want to see it go down? Our next guest has been invited to talk about that tonight at the University of Alaska Southeast Egan Lecture. Jason Gauthier is Vice President of Sales and Strategic Market Development for Moda, and that's a Portland-based health insurance company. He also serves on the University of Alaska Board of Directors and is a former student of UAS. So, Jason, I am going to just cut to the chase. How come health insurance costs so dang much in Alaska?
Well, that's a very good question, a very reasonable question that's got a very long and convoluted answer, but I think it really ties into the overall cost of healthcare in Alaska, and it's a tough nut to crack. I do think the market has stabilized somewhat in recent years. Moda, my company, is actually in the individual market. We filed a small rate decrease for the upcoming plan year in 2022, so that's certainly some good news for consumers, but Alaska is it's a small market in terms of population. It's about 710,000 people, roughly, that live in the state. It is, from a provider perspective, not overly competitive, and it is expensive to recruit to for care, and the cost of care really translates directly into health insurance premiums. And there's been, you know, some relief in the market. The state of Alaska and the Division of Insurance have done a wonderful job, I think, stabilizing the individual insurance pool. And we're starting to see some rate stabilization as well in the employer markets. But I'll be the first to tell you that I completely understand and sympathize. You know, I lived in Alaska for 17 years and consumed my fair share of healthcare there. I had two kids that were born in Alaska, so I know how it goes and how it feels. And I think the market is starting to improve, but there certainly is still more room for improvement.
So what makes Alaska the kind of market that you don't have very many providers? Because that seems to be the problem, is that without competition, you don't have prices that are competitive.
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword, I think. You start looking, you know, in the provider world, I mentioned it can be difficult to recruit to Alaska. It's, you know, like many other industries, the cost of labor is high, and you start looking into, you know, what it takes to move people up and recruit people to Alaska. I mean, even in the hospital world, you know, you get outside of Anchorage and most communities have one hospital, and we're a market base economy, and sometimes a lack of competition can lead to higher prices. And I think that translates a little bit into the health insurer world as well. There's really four primary players in the health insurance market in Alaska. You have Moda, Premera, Aetna, and United, and there's a few others that float around kind of on the edges there. But in a state of 710,000 people, or, you know, roughly thereabouts, it somewhat limits the options.
Are there any legislative actions that could be taken or anything that could be done to improve the climate for attracting insurers to Alaska?
Well, I think the Division of Insurance has done a fair amount of work on that. And I'll give you, I think, a great example of it. So Moda Health, my company, we did participate in the individual market in Alaska up until the end of 2016, when we had to exit the individual market in the state due to a whole variety of factors. But one of the reasons why we decided to not participate was, you looked at the overall climate, and back on 2015-16, there were significant double-digit rate increases in the individual market, and we didn't feel that at the time it was tenable to continue. And so Alaska, in the individual market, it went on with one carrier in that individual market, which was Premera, for several years. And in that time frame, the Division of Insurance in the state of Alaska were able to secure what's called the 1332 waiver from the federal government that allowed the state to form a reinsurance pool to cover the cost of higher claims. And that led to a significant amount of rate stabilization in that individual market. And it is a significant reason why Moda was able to reenter that individual market in 2020.
When you give your Egan lecture, what are going to be some of the golden coins that you're going to toss out, nuggets of information that we can keep that will help us?
Good question. So in terms of nuggets of information that you can keep, one is that, you know, despite all of the issues, I think you're starting to see more and more rate stabilization in the Alaska market. And to me, that's key, because while it remains expensive, you're not seeing the really, really big increases, you know, the 20s and 30% year over year that you saw in the earlier part of the last decade. And to me, that's a significant part in the overall, I don't know, I would use the term recovery, but you start looking at where the healthcare market in Alaska, I think, is going in the next 5 to 10 years, and having more and more stabilization and more collaboration in that market is going to be critical. And you're starting to see more and more of that in all kinds of different areas in Alaska, which I think is fantastic.
Well, I hope that that all pans out. And thanks so much for being here with us. And I hope that that people benefit from hearing your lecture, that they have some takeaways.
Well, I hope so too. And thank you for the opportunity. It was great to talk to you, Rhonda.
Thank you, Jason Gauthier, tonight's presenter at UAS's Egan Lecture Series, which streams live at 7. Listening to another song from Ka-Chung Stephen Blanchett, one of the organizers of the Rock Auk Indigenous Music Festival. In this piece, he teamed up with Byron Nikolai from Tuksuk Bay.
We cried and we laughed. Lessons from my history, but not of how we go back. Cause we strive to move forward, a vision of what we can be. Full is our circle, complete is you and me. And we'll fill it with love, and we'll fill it with joy, and we'll fill it with pride, a vision of what we can be. My first Alaskans, my first Alaskans, my first Alaskans, I love you.
Up next, the Juno Artist Gallery is featuring one of its newest members this month. We'll meet Sunny Zhang when we come back.
As natives hand in hand, shift of a paradigm. What's the answer? Maybe in the land. 10,000 years we met as beautiful native tribes. We didn't stop this fire, but we kept it in the dark times. And your mind, my first and last hands. My first Alaskans, my first Alaskans, I love you. I love you, I love you. My first Alaskans, I love you. My first Alaskans, I love you. My first Alaskans, I love you. I love you, I love you. My first Alaskans, I love you. My first Alaskans, I love you. My first Alaskans, I love you.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Thank you for being here with us. I'm Rhonda McBride. If you are out and about for First Friday tonight, you might want to check out the Juno Artist Gallery, where Li Yuan Zhang, also known by friends as Sunny, is the featured artist this month, and she joins us now, as well as Mary McEwen. Both are members of the co-op, and Sunny happens to be one of the newest members. So, Sunny, why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm so happy you invite me in today. It's so exciting to become featured artist of the Juno Artist Gallery for this month. Actually, I joined this gallery like just 2 months. I was so excited to become one of member of them, because you know this gallery is such fantastic gallery in the local. So I just proud of I'm being there to be one of member with them.
Mary, maybe you could explain to us how people become members and what membership involves at the Juno Artist Gallery.
Well, becoming a member of the gallery involves a couple of different things. The first of which is kind of a year-long, at minimum, financial commitment and time commitment to join the gallery. there are 16 of us now that collectively own and operate the gallery now that Sunny has joined us. And that includes everything from taking time behind the counter, helping customers, and spending time in the gallery running the business, and also the time that it takes to run things behind the scenes. And, you know, things like our website and ordering supplies and designing displays and all the things that go into a business. All of the artists collectively manage those tasks. And then the other part of the application process is really a kind of a juried process on the applicant's artwork. They bring in some samples of their work, and then the existing members of the gallery take a vote to decide to bring that person into the gallery. And, you know, being a business, one of the things that we're looking for is, you know, not only the quality of the artwork, but how it would be sellable. And I think when we saw Sunny's artwork, we really noted right away, of course, we were excited about the talent that she shows. But also, I think having some of her work really adds some variety to the gallery. She has a lot of familiar subjects to us in Alaska with landscapes and animals that we know would sell well among visitors. We get a lot of traffic into the gallery during tourist season. And also Sunny's work has some real uniqueness to it in her materials and in her techniques. For example, she has some pieces that are pyrography or wood burning, and it really brings a uniqueness that is something different for our gallery. So we're excited to have that.
Sunny, what's it like to be a part of the gallery, to find other artists to share your work with, get ideas, collaborate?
Yeah, I think I joined this gallery. Sometimes I can see some artist work, which we are influenced to each other. It also brings some inspiration to me. Yeah.
So has being in Juno had an influence on your art?
Yes, of course. Juno is such unique, amazing place. After I moved here, the Juno wonderful landscape brings a lot of artistic inspiration to me. So after I moved here, I just start to paint some beautiful landscape about Alaska.
So tell us a little bit about how you got your start in art.
I have loved art since I was a child, but unfortunately I didn't have a chance to pursue my artist dream, like my childhood dream, want to be artist. Because I came from China, in traditional Chinese culture, parents has a great authority in the family. Then children usually very respect their parents, especially in my times. So my parents' opinion, they thought if I to be artist, it's kind of like risk decision. So after that, I become a teacher as they expected that way. But finally, I got a chance to chasing my childhood dream, which is to be artist after I moved to Juno.
Well, Sunny, I'm glad that you didn't give up your dream despite what your parents thought you should do.
Thank you. Yeah, I was so excited about that.
And your art will be up all month, so I look forward to stopping in and seeing it during the month of November. Thanks so much. Hope you get a good turnout tonight. Thanks.
Thank you, Linda.
Support for Juno Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Klingit and Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.
And that'll do it for Juno Afternoon, which is broadcast from Klingit Ani. live on KTOO 104.3 FM, online at ktoo.org, and repeated at 7 on KTOO. This show is a production of the KTOO Arts and Culture Team, which includes Shelley Delaney, KXLL's Chandra Boom, and the leader of our team, Cheryl Snyder. I'm Rhonda McBride, your host for today. Our theme music is by Indian Agent, and some of our other music is composed by Matthew Fabian. To listen to interviews, see links to anything that we have talked about today, or just to be on the show yourself, check out our website at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. Until next time, thanks for joining the conversation. And from all of us at KTOO, gunakshish. Have a great weekend. Thank you.